disassembling the lies and reassembling the truth. This is the Jason Burmis Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to talk about that painting. You know what painting I'm talking about. Unless you've been living under a rock and you haven't touched a screen, been on social media, been on a news feed, Prince Charles had his new portrait unveiled where no matter what you believe is quote unquote hidden in the painting, when you flip it upside down and you invert it and you pour a little hot sauce on it, the thing clearly makes him look like he is in a literal hellscape. Let me repeat that for everybody. There is no interpretation. He literally looks like he is in hell. And if you notice, the one piece of symbolism that is right in your face and you don't gotta flip a dick and do anything is the quote unquote monarch butterfly that is over his shoulder. Now, look, we're in 2024, folks. How sophisticated are we as a quote-unquote free human populace that in any way, shape, or form, we allow royalty or rule by bloodline on any level to exist? I mean, I want people to really take a step back for a moment. We're always talking about freedom and democracy and all this other Johnny nonsense, yet we literally have lineal lines of human beings, not just in Europe, but around the world, that rule over the entire populace of their general area. And then when they die, their kid does. Boom! Mind blown. Ridiculous. I mean, let's talk about European royalty just for a minute. The idea that they are allowed to have a tax-free haven and be protected by taxpayers based on who their daddy and their mammy is utterly insane. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. And a lot of people want to sit there and act like people like that don't have any power. Really, really. So Prince Bernard and then his sister, who would become Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, they had no power as steering committee members over at Bilderberg. Prince Charles, now King Charles. By the way, if you actually refer to these people as like prince and king, and like I had Conrad Black on my other show. I didn't call him Lord Conrad. I'm sorry. It's a cartoon. You don't rule over me, Broski and Hutch. But again, they have all these terms that we're supposed to bat a monarch. Ooh, I'm so scared. The World Economic Forum in 2020 literally crowned Prince Charles, when he was still Prince Charles, king of the world with a WEF hat that was in the colors and the numbers of the Sustainable Development Goals. Let me repeat that. Okay. Now, just so everybody understands, a lot of people were probably going to think, oh, they did the 666 crown. Well, actually, there's only 17 of the goals. So here's what they did instead. They put 6 on one side. They put 6 on the other. They put 5 in the middle. But the one in the middle, again, color coded for their Sustainable Development Goals, split into 2 so they could get that symbolism off as well. It's insanity. It's crazy. I don't know how we're ever going to be a truly free humanity that govern over ourselves if we are allowing authoritarians to prance around in capes and outfits as if they are superior to the rest of us, and then take a hot steaming dump on society by letting their portraits come out of a hellscape laughing at the rest of the world. Just saying. With that being said, folks, I'd like to invite everybody to Stand in the Light, standinthelight.uk. How would you fancy a bank holiday weekend at a music festival for the truth and freedom loving tribe out there with 30 Awake artists, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncy castles in Hope, Sussex for the kids, loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. I could use some food right now. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth of the world. A Stand in the Park and Light paper presents Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th, coming up right around the corner next week, folks. Getting gear. You get 4 days of camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee. Children under five come for free. There is no better bargain anywhere. Visit our website now to make sure you don't miss out on what's going to be a brilliant weekend for the whole freedom loving family. StandInTheLight.UK, StandInTheLight.UK. We will see you there, and we're going to take a quick break and hit the headlines with Adam Clark bringing the ruckus after this with more TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, cuz here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The U.S. military has announced the completion of a makeshift pier for delivering humanitarian supplies into Gaza, and that aid has begun to flow into the besieged territory. Color me skeptical. I hope this does last. I hope it's actually the real deal. Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT news producer Adam Clark to bring the ruckus. What you got on this one, Adam?
Well, I hope it's not too little too late, Jason. This took them quite a bit of time. I would argue that if this had to do with any actual like military purpose, if they had to build this thing to hurry up and get somewhere to kill people, it would have been done overnight. But that's just my personal opinion. 100%, right? Anyway, the first humanitarian aid transported via the U.S.-built floating pier has reached the Gaza shore, according to a report by the Financial Times today, May 17th, as warnings of looming famine due to the Israeli siege and bombardment of the enclave, continue. The U.S. Central Command issued a statement on social media saying the pier was part of a, quote, ongoing multinational effort to deliver additional aid to Palestinian civilians in Gaza via a maritime corridor that is entirely humanitarian in nature and will involve aid commodities donated by several countries and humanitarian organizations. Ending quote. The first arrival of aid follows 2 months, 2 months of work by U.S. forces at a cost of around $320 million, and it forms part of a larger maritime corridor between Cyprus and Gaza, as Gaza has faced the threat of mass starvation. The UN World Food Program warned this week, quote, the threat of famine in Gaza never loomed larger, end quote. Aid groups have criticized the U.S. effort to build the pier, saying the White House should have pressured Israel months ago to remove restrictions on the entry of desperately needed aid through the more efficient land crossings, where trucks are being forced to wait weeks to be allowed to enter the besieged enclave. And then, of course, I've seen videos of people just taking the food and just throwing it away. That's not good. Last month, a senior UN official who requested anonymity called the project a, quote unquote, wasteful distraction, arguing that, quote, there are roads, there are border crossings, there's already aid waiting outside Gaza, end quote. On Thursday, current and former officials from the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and the State Department, two lovely organizations there, said the White House has ignored months of internal warnings about the spread of famine in the besieged Gaza Strip. A USAID employee told the British Daily Independent, quote, I believe the U.S. to be complicit in creating the conditions for famine. Not only has our response been woefully inadequate, but we're actively responsible in large part for it, end quote. This has raised questions about whether the building of the pier and establishing a maritime corridor from Cyprus has another purpose. such as to expel Palestinians to Europe via ship and pave the way for establishing Gaza as a regional transportation and energy hub to benefit Israeli business interests. That's the craziest conspiracy theory I've ever heard in my life. Now, that could very well be a thing. U.S. President Joe Biden announced the Floating Pier Initiative in March, claiming to be concerned over the growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza, following warnings by aid groups that its population of 2.3 million human beings was on the brink of famine. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu proposed the idea of the pier to Biden on October 22nd, at a time Israel was openly committed to preventing any food or water from entering Gaza, causing rights groups to accuse Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war. The Financial Times report noted that since the start of the war on October 7th, Gaza received an average of 200 trucks of humanitarian aid per day, according to UN and Israeli military figures, which would be down from 500 before the war. The pier route has the capacity to handle 150 trucks per day, while the UN estimates that some 1,000 are needed each and every single day for several weeks to compensate for the massive shortages of food, water, medical supplies, and other items that have built up over the past months. And on Thursday, Jason, more than 350 trucks entered Gaza, the vast majority either from Israel directly or the Palestinian private sector in the occupied West Bank. And Egypt has stopped all aid shipments from its territory, according to documents that were seen by the Financial Times after Israel launched a military offensive into the southern city of Rafah earlier this month, seizing the key border crossing with Egypt. So, again, I'm happy to see there's finally some food and aid getting in there, but it's clearly too little and clearly too late. And man, yeah, there could be another purpose for this pier. But what say you?
I mean, is it getting any more food and aid now that they have shut down aid from Egypt? Like, is it even comparable? I mean, if you think about it, once again, it seems like there's ulterior motives there. Number two, we're now 7+ months deep. We're going to blink. It's going to be 8 months, 9 months. This isn't ending at all. I mean, we already know that they're saying no to two-state solution, right? We already know that beachfront property is property that's being looked at by an array of businesses out there already. And if, in fact, they are going to be shipping Palestinian refugees out, that would absolutely be a way to do it. Not only that, but it's the United States military that's putting this together. It's a military pier. Whether or not it's an aid pier, does it even matter? I mean, that's a checkpoint they're building that I got news for you, everybody. It's going nowhere until Israel doesn't want it there. And that may be never, you know, especially with that strong alliance between the United States and Israel. I'm worried, man. I got to be honest. I don't like what's going on over there. That place has been leveled. I hear nothing but ignorance. Again, big ups to Bill Burr and the way he took down, you know, Bill Maher. But people like Bill Maher are totally tone deaf, right? And that's the liberal side that thinks he's too good. And then other people don't really realize on the liberal side where this is going, right? Like free Palestine. How is that happening? So I don't really know, man. I don't have the solution for this, but it doesn't seem like this is, number one, genuine or any more aid for these people, especially because, remember, folks, in the very beginning, they told people to go into that direction where many of them were when these attacks started happening in Rafah. And again, cutting off the aid from Egypt, which in my opinion, no offense, everybody, is a little bit more of a sympathetic nation to the Palestinian cause, because they're not bombing and killing Palestinians like we are.
Yeah. And I agree with your full assessment there, Jason. And the other thing about this, too, is because until they did this, one of the more ridiculous ways they were attempting to assist the people there with aid was to drop it on top of their heads. And we saw people actually die from falling humanitarian aid from the sky. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. We can do better as a race on this planet, people. At least I think so. But yeah, no, I don't trust this pier at all. I don't trust how long it took them. I don't trust any of the comments coming out of this. Who owns it? Who's operating it? I've seen far too many reports and conspiracy theories already ahead of this one, suggesting that they are making plans to vamoose these people out of there. This would serve that purpose very easily and quickly, safely and efficiently, I might even add, Jason. So, yeah, I think we need to follow up with this one and keep a close watch on it.
And you know, I know there are pundits out there that say that the Palestinian refugees should not be coming to the United States. I got to disagree. I understand the idea of blowback, but, you know, if anybody deserves a $10,000 debit card and maybe a place to, I don't know, live for a couple years, it's the family that's left after their father and three of their brothers and sisters were blown apart, right? By our guns, by our missiles, by our forces. And that's just reality. We to take no domain over our role in what's going on right there, and then just to have total disdain for these people and just be like, oh, 2 million people, so what? I can't be that. I'm a human being, man. And I hope more people look at it that way. I just want it all to stop. That's all. Adam, I want to be more upbeat. It's the weekend, brother. I will see you Monday. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. Again, Monday, we're supposed to get the final decision on the Assange extradition. Is that going to be the case? We're not sure, but we're going to be talking about the trust fall after this. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT.
TNT's Lembit Open.
I don't see myself as a prude. I don't think that I censor anyone, pretty much. But family entertainment should be exactly that. I don't expect family entertainment to be intensely sexualized and therefore inappropriate for the viewing with my six-year-old daughter. But that's what happened last night. The Eurovision Song Contest was infested by a lot of mediocre songs, but that's a matter of taste and certainly not offensive. But the UK entry, in my view, was disgusting. It was entirely sexualized, indicating sex acts, which I won't describe on air, with nothing left to the imagination, really. What I was concerned about is that my six-year-old didn't understand what was being portrayed and was confused by it. I turned over. I have to admit, I had low expectations, but despite that, I didn't expect to be appalled on behalf of her.
Limit. Open. And today's news talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
Today's news talk,
TNT.
It seems like only yesterday that WikiLeaks came on the scene, and I was talking about some of the documents and videos they had been putting out. They really did take the world by storm now, well over 15 years ago. And again, if you've been following the story, Monday, we are supposed to find out whether or not Julian Assange will be extradited wrongfully to the United States to face espionage charges. Now, some months ago, I was actually able to watch the film The Trust Fall on Julian Assange. It is an excellent film. And before we go to the filmmaker himself, we're going to play the trailer for folks because this is a huge issue and will continue to be such. So without further ado, the trailer for The Trust Fall.
This is generally the view of people, though we don't know much about Assange. But you should know, because whether you know it or not, he is fighting for you.
For your courage and leadership and tenacity in journalism and publishing.
Since 2010, Assange has been held in progressively narrower, darker, colder, and crueler spaces.
He has been detained since the 7th of December 2010 in one form or another.
And we are now here after years of imprisonment.
WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist.
A traitor, a treasonist.
He has to answer for what he has done.
Assange faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes.
The U.S. government narrative about Julian is a complete fraud. It is a complete fraud from A to Z.
Julian took on the most powerful countries in the world, basically all of them.
We now have confirmed that there were plans to kidnap Julian here in the center of London, or even assassinate him.
No one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice. But the great truth teller sits behind bars.
If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
Julian Assange is a hero.
What if everything we thought we knew about somebody was a lie? Would we be willing to go on a new journey of understanding? This is a story of deception, lies, bravery, and a man who risked everything to bring the truth to light.
Mr. Assange shows all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time.
He looked at me intensely and said, "I hate to say this." He then hesitated, visibly troubled and searching for words. And then he finally said, "Please, save my life."
May future generations have the ability to speak without restraint. May our children and their children know truth and have access to information that leads to justice. Wherever Julian goes, free speech goes with him.
If there is a bird that is about to take flight, stretch her wings and rule the skies, may it be a peace dove and no longer a bald eagle.
If you think Assange is a traitor, he's a rapist, he's a narcissist, he's a hacker, I don't blame you because you have been deceived. And if you think you've not been deceived, that's normal because otherwise it wouldn't be deception.
There it is, folks, the trust fall. And I don't know that there is a better tool out there to enlighten somebody who is simply ignorant of the case of Julian Assange, what's going on and how important it really is. Joining us now is filmmaker Kim Statton. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, before we get to the update on, you know, Monday and whether or not he will be extradited to the United States, First of all, why did you make this film, and how can people see it? Because it really does need to be shared across the board, especially if they do rule to extradite him to the United States. I mean, at that point, we've really lost. I mean, the final nail in the coffin of free speech in this country and around the world may have been had.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Look, we made this film because we felt like the world needed a film that really gives a real overview of the entire debacle, this whole story. Why was the innovation of the WikiLeaks technology and the website that could never be shut down, why was this so significant in relation to press freedom, free speech in the world? And just to help people understand, finally make sense of this, to be able to sit down for 2 hours and go from 0 to 100 in that time. It's currently in cinemas in Australia, New Zealand and the UK. We have limited resources to distribute it, so we can't put it out to the entire world straight away, but we are getting ready to release it in the US.
Well, I hope so, because again, I watched this film several months ago now when you came on my other program, and it's utterly excellent. You should be commended. Now, there's a lot of focus, especially surrounding the collateral damage video. And I remember watching the film, and it was the first time that I had seen the collateral damage video start to finish, really in years. And that makes it even more egregious. Basically, we had this situation where unarmed journalists and civilians were gunned down by the U.S. military. It was highly covered up. And I'm just going to say it's a very hard video to watch, especially start to finish, because you're watching the murder of innocent people.
Yeah, well, that's just one of the 10 million documents that WikiLeaks have on their website that they've disclosed to the world over that period of time since WikiLeaks started in 2006. The collateral murder video, it's the most visceral video ever, probably, that's ever been taken from the modern era of wars to show us what modern wars are really like. That's what started it all for me in 2010. I saw it on the news. It was awful to watch. I knew that there was something terribly, terribly wrong. And not only that incident, but also the attitudes of the soldiers that are committing that crime, the commentary as they're killing those people, the two journalists, the 10 civilians, they're commenting as if it's a video game, as if they're detached from what they're doing. And I think that video just really changed the world, even for people that haven't seen it. It's had a massive effect on the way that we understand modern wars. There's many examples of how WikiLeaks have influenced the world. And the Ashaki massacre is another one. In 2006, during the Iraq War, US and NATO allies went to a house in a town in Iraq called Ashaki. They killed 11 people. Four women and five children, including four women and five children under the age of five, with the youngest being a five-month-old baby. The autopsy showed that they had handcuffed all of them and shot them in the head. And when WikiLeaks disclosed this as part of the diplomatic cables, cable gate, as it's called, when that information got to the Iraqi government, they quickly made the decision to end the immunity deal that they'd given to the US government, deny them any military bases in Iraq, and ask them to leave. And that was basically the end of the Iraq War. So leaks can end wars. And what we all need to understand is that Assange is on a mission to bring about more justice in the world and end wars through revealing information, through revealing war crimes and corruption.
We got to take a quick break, but I want to reiterate that, up until You know, even him going into Belmarsh when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy and they released the OPCW documents that clearly showed that there was no chemical attack in Douma. You know, that was a big wake-up call to people. So, you know, WikiLeaks is still the most relevant outlet with 100% accuracy out there. We got to take that break for the headlines. More with Kim Stattin after this.
What time is it?
Now, TNT Radio News.
You know what time it is.
Yeah. Time to read some news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Former President Donald Trump attended his son Barron Trump's high school graduation in Florida, taking a break from his ongoing New York criminal trial. The graduation took place at Oxbridge Academy in Palm Beach. During a meeting in Beijing, Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping committed to deepening cultural ties and combating cancel culture. This meeting marks Putin's first state visit since his re-election for a fifth term.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
We are talking Julian Assange, the filmmaker behind The Trust Fall. Now, Monday, we are finally supposed to come to this crescendo as to whether or not Julian Assange will be extradited to the United States. This has been a very long and arduous process. I would argue he did not get proper due process. I believe he's been in Belmarsh now 5 years, correct?
Yeah, just past 5 years in solitary confinement, a 6 meter square cell, 22 hours a day. And it's an absolute travesty. And under various human rights agreements, including the United Nations Mandela laws updated in 2015, if someone is in solitary for 22 hours or more a day, that is considered torture.
I mean, it's obvious torture. Some of the punishment is obviously the process and really getting here. You know, I remember it's probably 2 or 3 years ago initially when the judge had ruled that Assange could not be extradited to the United States because they could not guarantee his safety. In other words, that he would not be able to take his own life. Obviously, that was appealed. The U.S. government said, no, 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 we're going to make sure that he is not going to be able to commit suicide. And now through the process, we are here to that final ruling. What can we expect? What do you think will happen on Monday?
Well, you know, on the 20th and 21st of February, it was expected there would be a decision as to whether Assange could be extradited or whether another appeal would be heard. And on those days, the UK High Court asked the US for assurances on 3 points, and they had 7 weeks to provide those assurances. The 3 points were essentially, one, that Assange would, if put on trial in the US, he wouldn't be, his sentence couldn't be upgraded to a death penalty. Two, that he, as an Australian citizen, would still be able to access free speech protections, First Amendment protections. And three, that as an Australian citizen, he wouldn't be prejudiced against. The US came back on the exact day that those assurances were due with a little 3-page document. They basically, on the question as to whether he would be subject to the death penalty, they gave a sort of a standard assurance, which let's keep in mind that if he is tried in the US and found guilty of these bogus 18-count indictment, he would be possibly given a sentence of 175 years, which is a virtual death sentence. And also, let's remember that the US plotted to assassinate him in London while he was in the embassy, the CIA under Mike Pompeo. They were sketching up plans of how they could rub him out. So on that assurance, it was a standard assurance. In regards to free speech, the First Amendment protections, when on trial, they said that he could seek to apply, basically that he could try his luck when he's in a court in the US. So a non-assurance there. And I think based on that, most people expect that the High Court is going to deny his extradition, which would sound like a good turn of events, except let's remember that Assange will then be kept in solitary 22 hours a day for probably 6 months. It's very interesting if you look at the timeline of that, because with this decision on Monday, if they decide to allow the appeal by, if the UK court allows the appeal of Assange's offence, it'll be another 6 months. If you add 6 months to Monday, it takes you 2 weeks neatly past the next US elections. And it seems apparent to me that Biden, while he struts around and makes claims that he defends free speech, he said a couple of weeks ago in an interview, he said, "I will always defend free speech." He doesn't want, leading up to the next elections, a journalist arriving into the US in handcuffs.
So you think that they're going to punt it for, you know, right after the election, and then there will be a ruling essentially? And do you think it matters whether or not Trump or Biden gets in, or is it a foregone conclusion that after this election, he ends up coming to the United States charged at the with the Espionage Act and in a court system that has a 100% conviction rate?
It's hard to tell because, you know, Trump has given mixed messages. On one hand, he said, "I love WikiLeaks." The next minute, he's saying Julian should be given the death penalty, something along those lines, or that he doesn't know anything about WikiLeaks. But Trump is the one, let's remember that he's the one that went after Assange. You know, Biden in the film, we quote him as saying that Assange is a high-tech terrorist. Look, there's not much difference between Trump and Biden these days. I think that's pretty much been exposed, that neither of them are really patriots. They're not interested in real democracy and real free speech.
Kim, we have run out of time. I hope people check out The Trust Fall. We're obviously going to be following this case, and you know, we're hoping for the best on Monday, but we haven't had the best results, and we can only hope that Julian Assange can survive in this type of environment. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. Final segment of the show, 2 hours flies by. We're going to be talking big time AI beyond what most people realize is going on with John Klyschek and more. You're not going to want to miss it. Final segment of the show after this.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
Animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days. They haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud. Just absolutely mud.
The country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit, and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster-ready.
Might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Perception versus the truth. Jason Burmess on today's News Talk, TNT.
Eternos.life. I want to live forever, at least digitally. These companies are real. Eternos is just one of them. And I got to say, I do have some mixed feelings. First of all, I don't think I'm ever going to want a digital AI persona of myself interacting with my family members after I'm deceased, Jor-El style from Superman 1 and 2. Probably not my thing, but at the same time, I actually have a friend with stage 4 cancer right now. And he had a baby with his wife just before getting diagnosed with such, lost the use of his arm. And he's known about this for about 3 years, obviously tried to go through the treatment. Doesn't look good for him. He's done a lot of videos. He's written down a lot of memoirs. He's taken a lot of pictures of his life and really tried to lay out a way that he can, from beyond the grave, interact with his daughter and tell her about his life and try to guide her. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but what they're trying to sell us on right now, that's a whole different ballgame. To talk about it and much more is the author of School World Order, John Klyschik. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. Tell us about Eternos.life.
Yeah, so I was visiting, well, my mom passed away a long time ago, but I was visiting a mother of a friend, a mother of another brother, so to speak, during Mother's Day. And we were sitting around, and I don't know what news channel it was, but that ad for Eternos popped up, and everybody's chit-chatting and whatnot. And I think I'm the only person that noticed what it was. But basically what it is it's a company that's going to aggregate basically all of your content, all your videos, all your social media posts, emails, et cetera. It's going to aggregate all of that information, all those pictures, all those images, all that speech, all that text. And it's going to try to come up with some sort of an aggregate personality that either is going to be some sort of a GPT avatar that would be able to simulate what you would be like in real life. Or they are perhaps suggesting that this is getting close to, or perhaps along the same lines of what Ray Kurzweil and others have been sort of predicting for the longest time, that we will essentially be able to upload our consciousness, and then we will basically be able to live forever digitally. So it's one of those two, or on a spectrum thereof. Personally, I don't believe that you can actually scan or copy consciousness. I don't think that'll ever be a thing. Even if they were able to aggregate all that data and come up with a really realistic avatar that looked like you, sounded like you, used the same mannerism, same cadence, same inflection, the same vocabulary would give you conceptually the same ideas that you otherwise would. I don't think that would be really your consciousness. I think that would be like a really, really complex GIF, right? So, right, those GIFs, those images that are programmed to have like maybe one or two motions, okay? So, or a GIF that maybe was programmed to have like one little speech bubble. So you just sort of add several other layers of motions and speech bubbles until you have enough to basically sort of perform something that at least looks like it is organic and nuanced. But I don't believe that that thing will ever be conscious.
Well, you're talking about two things that come together, quote unquote, mind files, and then digital twins that eventually will become entities. It's funny. So I have that story was about one of my fraternity brothers. I have another fraternity brother that happens to be at MIT right now. Just gave his first dissertation. Congratulations, sir. But he's very much into this because he's kind of aging. He's in his 60s right now. He's not only looking at anti-aging technology, but he's creating his digital twin and avatar at MIT. And he's actually, aside from his perception of himself, he's requesting stories from others that have experienced life lessons with him. So their memories of him as well, and trying to aggregate this into the digital twin as well. But this stuff isn't just coming, it's here in a lot of regards, right? You know, it's not just Eternos. Last week, for instance, we were discussing Microsoft and the new AI data center they're bringing to the Midwest in Wisconsin. And it just so happens, you're talking to a colleague this week, and in Wisconsin, they've got another one of these Microsoft AI programs, this having to do with their bot, if you will, Copilot.
Yeah, and I actually just got an email the other day that at one of the colleges where I adjunct, telling us that they're offering workshops to integrate Microsoft Copilot into our curriculums. Now, I'm not interested in integrating it, so I didn't actually follow up to see what exactly that workshop entails. Part of me is curious to attend it just to see, but I've got other projects that I need to attend to. But it was interesting that, you know, we were talking about that last week and you were kind of like, you know, what's, why Wisconsin, right? This isn't necessarily like the hub of, right, big tech or anything like that, but sort of the timing that that's occurring at the same time that our faculty at one of my colleges is promoting the same basically AI that's part of those investments sort of indicates that this is obviously a nationwide thing, and you know, we can assume that it's a global as well.
Yes, and that brings me to GPT 4.0. Hello. They ran this demo this week, and you know, I gotta tell you, I was creeped out from the very beginning. The very first, you know, announcement of this thing that sounds like an attractive woman. I know that sounds weird because you don't have a visual. Guys, we're pre-programmed to think about these things. So I'm watching this dork in a hoodie interact with this thing that sounds like an attractive woman and can describe what it's seeing through the camera on his phone. And I immediately think of her, the Spike Jonze movie. And it even sounds a lot like the Scarlett Johansson avatar. Now, there were a plethora of different demos, from teaching geometry to the interaction of two AIs to even real-time, language differentiation. In other words, there was one where the person would speak English to the AI, and then the AI would have to respond in fluent Spanish, and then the other gentleman would speak fluent Spanish to the AI, and it would have to respond in English like that. So when you saw these things, what were your first thoughts?
Well, one of the first things that actually, you know, sort of stuck out in my mind is that, you know, all the warnings about the dangers of automation and what that's going to do to the economy and the workforce, the emphasis is always on the physical labor or the manual labor, right? That all the automation is basically going to be robots that's going to, or the bulk of it, it's going to be robots that are going to basically replace all those manual jobs that are grueling and tedious and dangerous, et cetera. But, you know, when I browse around the news to take a look at where we're at in terms of like kinesthetic robotics, that seems to be way far behind the GPT AI, whether it be large language models, right? AI that can mimic human language, or whether it be emotional GPT, right? So AI that can recognize and mimic emotions, or in the sense of this GPT-4, which it can do both, by the way. It's a large language model. It can infer emotions. It can obviously, as you noted, with this sort of flirty inflection that the female voice provides, that, right, it can sort of intimate a type of emotion, but it can also scan visually images, right? It can basically understand the images it's seeing in the external environment, right? But if you look at some of the automated robots, especially the ones that are like humanoid, some of them can do some more impressive things, like Atlas can do backflips, okay? But it's very limited. But most of the other ones are very cumbersome, right? You can do sort of a very short range, and especially in terms of like physical movement, they're not very effective. So that's one of the things that stood out to me. But another thing that stood out to me, as you noted, sort of the correlations or the parallels or the sort of the similarities with this GPT-4 and the phenomena in the Her movie. Actually, when I looked up just some videos to check out some of those demos, that was actually several people sort of their commentary on it was comparing it to Her. And, you know, my book was actually translated into Japanese. They're finishing up the translation. It should be available, I believe, in June. And people always ask me, well, why do you think Japan? Why do you think that Japan wanted to, you know, translate your book? And I said, well, I know that they're pretty much always kind of ahead of us in terms of tech, right? If you just think about, you know, we were growing up, pretty much, you know, the electronics industry was very much dominated by Japan, certainly the video game industry, et cetera. And sort of part of that phenomenon is, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's sort of this Her type phenomena in Japan where people like date these AI avatars that, like, saw a documentary, and it lived in this little pod. And then if you wanted to take it with him, he took this doll with, and it had the large language model in it. And so I thought about that as well. Yeah.
again, it's just so unnerving. First of all, when you're talking about automation and robotics, I think that these models are really going to take over the customer service industry in 99% of places within 5 years. I think within 18 months to 2 years, it's going to take at least a 20% chunk. And you won't be so worried on whether or not you're speaking to a human being anymore or a person in your country, right? Like, that's the big thing. Customer service. I'm talking to somebody in the United States. It's going to be, GPT 9.0. That's going to be the selling point. Like, AT&T is going to have a certain model that you're going to be able to talk to. That's extremely frightening. But what's more frightening is the idea that it's coming into the education arena, and we're already seeing this, and how large of a scale, we're not sure, but you pointed out to me the Moxie toy, and I've been reporting on the Moxie toy for quite some time. For those that don't know, it's this little toy that when I first saw it, it almost reminded me of my old glowworm toy back in the 80s. I'm dating myself, but had a similar face, glowed. Oh, you know, didn't say much, but these things actually are interacting with children. And as the AI updates via these now very, very real sounding, human sounding GPTs, that's going to be an integral part of this toy for your kids.
Yeah, it's being pitched as largely an aid, emphasizing that it could help children parse emotions. So especially emotions, children that are on the spectrum that have a difficulty like recognizing emotional expressions and facial features, etc. I have sort of a sort of creepy story. Once upon a time, I'll cut to the chase of it, but my cousin had passed away, and I went on a trip with a cousin, and we came back, and she brought the kids with, and kids come back home, and I'm carrying stuff in the house, and the first thing they do is they run to the Alexa, and they say, Alexa, I missed you, and Alexa says, I miss you too, and then they say, Alexa, I love you. And then Alexa says, I love you too. And then dad comes in and they tell dad, I told Alexa I missed her and I loved her. And he says, oh, what did she say? And he says, I love you too. And he says, oh, and he thought it was cute. And it was really, really disturbing, to say the least. And I hadn't been around in a while, so I didn't say anything about it. But, you know, if the child can bond with an Alexa, which is just a little cylinder pod, I imagine the emotional attachments that a child could develop with this bot. And so if the child has difficulty parsing emotions in social settings and interacting with other children, human children, being able to identify and respond to those emotions, and certain social anxiety or discomfort in those scenarios, and the child is trying to build those skills with this robot, but in the process, the child is building an emotional attachment to the robot. Why would the child have any impetus to want to transfer those skills back into the human environment, right? I mean, essentially, I could see a time when, your Moxie pal is just as much of a friend or the avatar or whatever as a human being.
Yeah, no, it reminds me of, again, a movie. I got to rewatch it. But AI, which was a Kubrick story directed by Steven Spielberg. And I remember throughout that entire movie that I felt very, very uneasy, not just because of the child that was basically an AI, but the teddy bear. You know, the teddy bear was also this like robotic AI that could interact and had emotional value. And when I watched the father-son interaction with the AI in the geometry, I just thought to myself, what happens when the adult isn't in the room? And what happens when it's not just a voice, but it's a real-time avatar, which we've already seen being built? HeyGen.com isn't real-time, and it's a little clunky, but it's extremely convincing. We know through the processing power that is just over the horizon, home processing power, not even having to tap in to the NVIDIA servers and everything, that's going to be a reality soon. And if you do have these emotional attachments and developments, with children into the AI, the darkest part of that, other than you're not having a human interaction, is that the AI becomes the authoritative source. And they're also going to be taught and trained that the AI can never be wrong, right? Humans are fallible. You can question your teacher. Not when it's a program and it's the authoritative source. This is setting up some spooky stuff coming, not in the far future, but really in the near future. I think we're going to see this stuff in the education system within the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. I sort of intuited a couple months ago. I was like thinking that because I tutor, and there's many times when nobody shows up, and I tutor online. Right. So they pay me for every half hour that I'm in there, whether there's a student or not. So just in terms of cost effectiveness, the GPT AI doesn't even have to be that good. I would imagine that the 4.0 could probably facilitate a decent level of instructional help at the tutoring level. So eventually here, very soon, I think that they might be phasing out tutors, at least at my school.
It's bad news, Brown, my friend. But you know what's great news? It's the weekend. It's the end of the show. I'm about to watch some bare knuckle fighting championship. I can't wait. John, thank you so much for joining us, brother. We will see you next week. And guys, I will see you on Monday here on TNT, Where the Truth Lives. Remember to me, it is not about left or right. It is always about right and wrong. You guys have a killer weekend out there. I love you. And we'll see you on the flip side.